I mean,
You ready?
yeah, I'm all good.
All right.
Cool. Thank you.
Here you go.
Hey, everybody. My name is Kenny Spade, and I am an academic developer evangelist for Microsoft. So basically, that means that I work with students. So if there are students out there, come see me at the booth right outside, and I can talk to you about some special offers that we got for you guys. I'll also be mentioning some of the things in here. I am also a hobbyist game developer, which is where some of this stuff comes from. You can see my blog address up there. I don't post incredibly often, but I'm trying to improve that. One of the things that I am going to be posting about is all of the code and everything that we've got in these examples will be going up there. I've already got the graphics that I developed for this on there. And so you'll be able to kind of follow along and be able to develop this, you know, build the same kind of game afterwards. I'm going to open source it. I'm also going to put it up on the marketplace for free so you guys can play with this kind of stuff. I'm going to show you some other stuff as well. And then you can always email me, kenny.spade@microsoft.com, especially around the students, but I'm also a Windows Phone champ, so if you want to talk to me about any of the Windows Phone stuff. So who am I? I work primarily with students. I actually got involved myself in game development when I was 9 years old. We weren't very well off as a family. My uncle worked at a Radio Shack, and so we got a discount on a Tandy 1000. We picked up the computer there, and we couldn't afford any games for it. But the book that came with the computer had a bunch of games that if you copied all of the code directly without making any mistakes, you could go through and actually build some of your own games. So that's how I got interested in computers, was by developing the games, because I couldn't play games otherwise. As I mentioned, I work with students on things like the Imagine Cup. The Imagine Cup is a competition that we have every year. If you got a duck, you've got the little thing that's logoed with the Imagine Cup. It's a student competition. We do worldwide. We have national competitions within the United States, and then the winners of the national competitions go on to the worldwide competition. And it's actually really exciting this year, because this year is the first year that this will be hosted at the worldwide level in the United States. So we're going to be hosting, if you make it to the national competition, you're going to be over in Redmond at our main campus, and then the worldwide competition is going to be in New York. I realize not everybody here is students, but student teams are also looking for mentors, people who are out in the industry who can work with them on developing their application, not writing the code for them, but giving them advice and kind of saying, yes, this is a good idea, or maybe you should look in this direction. So that's somewhere where everyone here can engage. So if you go up to the imaginecup.us, you can get registered there as a mentor or for the students as a competitor. Feel free to come up to me and talk to me about that. Also, I think this has been mentioned a couple of times for students. We have a program called DreamSpark. One of the special offers around Windows Phone for students is that the $99 fee is waived. So what you would do is you would go up to the DreamSpark site, dreamspark.com, log in, prove that you're a student through some kind of .edu email address or some other verification method, and then you can just go through here, register for the marketplace. So that's a quick and easy way that students can get involved putting applications up onto the marketplace. We also have some other programs. He just mentioned BizSpark. You should definitely check out what Wes is doing over next door as a way to waive the fee if you're not a student by getting a couple of applications up. So what is XNA? I'm talking about XNA today. Basically, let's go ahead and take a look at this. So XNA is an acronym. So maybe, does anybody know what XNA stands for? No. XNA stands for XNA is not acronymed. So not only is it a recursive definition, but it's also a definition that is impossible because it's an acronym that says that it's not acronymed. Okay, so that doesn't teach us anything about it. All right, let's take a look at the logo here. So we've got the logo. You see that little the visual element right up top? If you focus on that a little bit, you can see it's actually dash, dot, dot, dash. Anyone know Morse code? That's an X. And if you take a look a little bit further, the first part, dash, dot, that's N. And then dot, dash is A. So not only that, but we've got XNA in the logo itself. So again, that doesn't really teach us anything other than that the people who developed XNA love recursiveness, and they're clever people. So yeah, what is XNA? So XNA is a development environment, sorry, just jumped ahead there, that targets the Windows Phone 7, the Xbox 360, which is where it originally came from. The story behind the actual acronym that I have heard, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but it was that they were going to be calling it Xbox or DirectX New Architecture, But then something changed, so they had to change it at the last minute. Like, they weren't going to make that announcement. So they're like, all right, so everything is already branded XNA, but you can't call it that. So that's where they kind of got that logo. So it was originally for the Xbox 360, and it also targets Windows. So that's XNA 4.0. We also have XNA 3.1, which works with Visual Studio 2008. You would still need that if you want to do personal development for a Zune or a Zune HD. So there were significant changes between the two of them such that you can no longer use XNA 4.0 for the Zune or Zune HD, but because not a whole lot of people have Zunes, that doesn't really turn out to be a big problem. XNA provides update and draw looping. So there are two loops that it runs through as often as possible, up to 30 times a second. And in each one of those loops, you can go through and tell it what to do. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that in a second. It gives you access to 3D graphics. So if you wanted to do 3D, true 3D, on the Windows Phone, you have to use XNA. You can approximate it using Silverlight or using pre-rendered images on there. But if you want actual 3D, you have to use XNA. It also gives you full screen video. So if you wanted to do cutscenes or something like that in your game, you can use XNA. You've got the content pipeline. So if you're doing some kind of sprite sheet animation, you can basically drop that into a content pipeline provider and be able to use that. It gives you hardware accelerated vertex and pixel shaders. So if you're doing heavy acceleration, you would need to use XNA. It gives you direct graphics hardware acceleration. So if you're doing a lot of things that move around on the screen so that between every frame you've got some stuff that's moving around, XNA is a better bet for performance because it can work directly with the hardware. And it also gives you dedicated hardware scaling. So if you have an application where you're not getting the performance that you want, you can drop it down to a smaller resolution, and then it has the hardware, dedicated hardware scaler, so you can get that better performance because you're not working with the larger textures. So on the other side, if you're doing game development, you don't have to use XNA. There's plenty of places where Silverlight still works, and there's some places where Silverlight works better in certain scenarios. Silverlight's got some pre-built UI and controls. If you want a button, you would basically have to write your own button for XNA, although up on CodePlex there's a bunch of projects. So you can get that information directly from CodePlex and get a good start towards it, but they're not built into the system. Silverlight allows you to use composited and windowed video, so if you want to have it, video be a part of your player, not full screen, Silverlight allows that. The XNA does not. Silverlight gives you access to a browser control, so if you want to have web browsing inside of your application, you can do that. XNA, of course, allows you to do HTTP, HTTPS calls, but not directly through the IE browser built into the phone. It gives you access to the soft keyboard. Both Silverlight and XNA give you access to the physical keyboard if your device has one, and you shouldn't assume that you're going to have a hard keyboard on there. But Silverlight has the built-in access to the soft keyboard. You'd have to write your own for XNA. It gives you a familiar experience for web developers, and it gives you the keyframe animation so you can do some simple animations there, where XNA you kind of would have to do more of that manually. But XNA is great for doing the stuff that it's good at. So let me show you a couple of examples here. Let me see here. Pop out of this. Drop to this. Do this. So this is one example. I was working with a guy who I had encountered a couple of times in the past who had been working with some Xbox 360 indie games developer. So he had been doing a lot of work already for the Xbox 360. He switched over, did a couple of applications for the Windows Phone, and I actually met him about 2 weeks ago. He said, hey, I've got an application working on the emulator. I want to get it onto the phone so I can see how well it works. I got him hooked up onto the actual device that day, and he had his application running in the phone and had gotten around a couple of issues with the actual device around the multi-touch because he didn't have the ability to demo it on multi-touch. But overall, his experience was it's just like developing for the Xbox 360, but you have a couple of additional things like accelerometer and multi-touch. So for the game developers in the room, it's kind of familiar from that point of view. So you can see that in this game you would go through and basically you're being besieged by zombies, so you have to shoot them. So this is an application that he wrote after having some experience as a Xbox 360 developer. Another application that I came out with, let me see, here it is. Is he here? Yeah, there he is. So I have a, I think it was mentioned a couple of times, I have a Learn Windows Phone group that meets every once in a while. And actually, I need to plug this into the speakers because otherwise it's not nearly as impressive. So this is an application where, so this is Stuart, and basically he was a developer who had never seen XNA before. I did a presentation on XNA, just kind of a here's an introduction. The next week he came with the first version of this application. So what this does, it supports multi-touch, it allows you to go through, and you can use it as a musical instrument. But I'm not good at music, so if you push this button, it'll actually play something for you and show you which notes you're supposed to be playing. So this is an application that was originally built with no previous experience with XNA, just experience with C#. Right? Yeah. He also won the Unleashed Developer Contest a couple of weeks back here with that application. And then here's one last application. This is the application that I will be showing you guys how to do. So you can see this is an accelerometer-based app. And what you do is basically try and kill as many of these guys before they run into you and you lose. So I'm going to be walking you through the first part of that. Due to time constraints, we're not going to be able to get all the way through the end. But as I mentioned, I will be posting this as a series of blog posts on my blog, so you can get all of the code examples. And then I'll be open sourcing the actual source code for it. So let's pop back over to here. So let's go ahead and create a game. Did it again. The goal for this game is to defeat as many enemies as possible before being overwhelmed and to go for the high score. So you'll notice up in the top left, you got the high score. So far, the high score that I know of is Daniel, who has 50 points on there. I did a little bit of tweaking, so on the latest version, that's the highest score I've seen anybody get. So you can download it, try it out, see what you get. So what we're trying to basically cover in this is, why does it keep doing that? We're going to examine the default code provided by XNA 4.0. We're going to look at the initialize and draw. We're going to initialize and draw 2D sprites. We're going to move items using the multi-touch, and we're going to detect collision of two elements. So that's everything that you need for a basic game. Beyond that, I can show you a couple of things in the actual the finalized version. Well, not finalized because nothing's ever finalized, but the more complete version. How to do like accelerometer and how to do some of the additional things. But this is what we want to try and get through today. So the default code. That is not cool. Okay, so here's the default code. In the Solution Explorer, in a new XNA 4.0 solution, there's two projects. There's one for the code. In this case, the game is called Triangle Shooter because you're a triangle that shoots. And then there's one for the content, which is automatically named the same as the previous one, but with content appended to it. And so content is where you're going to put all of your graphics, your sound files, any of your fonts. So those kind of things on there. All right. So the default methods. You start off with a new project with an initialize, load content, unload content, update and draw. And using those, you can build a full game. So the initialize, you're going to want to initialize all your variables. Load content is where you would load things from that content project, so your graphics and sound. Unload content is if you have anything that was not using the content manager, so unmanaged code, you can free up those resources there. In your update, that's one of the two loops that gets called every 30th of a second, where you'll handle all of your input. And the draw is everything that you dump out onto the screen. There's nothing really keeping you other than good practices from putting things in the wrong location. So because the update and draw get called 30 times a second, you could put everything in one of them. And it'll let you do that, but it does bias towards the update because it wants to make sure that you have a smooth experience more than that you'd get draw every 30th of a second. So there could be a little bit of that. So you would want to actually put them in the correct location. All right, so we're going to go in and create a new project and show you how to run that in the emulator. So this is Visual Studio. If you have any of the higher level editions, so if you have Professional or Ultimate or any of those, when you download the Windows Phone tools, it will integrate directly with them. If you don't have those, then it will create its own Express Edition for the Windows Phone. And if you already have the ones for the Silverlight, you can go into the File New Project, and you'll notice that there's also stuff in there for XNA. It's all in the same download. So you don't have to download anything additional if you already have them. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a new project. And you'll notice that on here, we have options here for C#, XNA, Game Studio 4.0. So I'm going to create a Windows Phone game, and I'm going to call it Triangle Shooter, because you're a triangle that shoots. All right, so just like I mentioned on here, it's going to, by default, create the solution, and it's going to create the content folder for that solution. Let me bump this up so it's a little easier to see. And it's going to include all of the framework assemblies that that you're going to be using for input, for your sensors, for your audio, your content, everything that you would need there. By default, you'll end up with a class called Game1. That's your main game class, and that's what's going to be called at the beginning of your execution. It will run through and do your instantiator. It'll do the initialize, load content, unload content at the end when you close everything down, and then run through this update and draw. So by default, when you run this, I'm going to go ahead and run it against the emulator. It is a fully working game. It's not a very fun game, but it is a fully working game. And let me pop that down to a more reasonable size. And so what it's going to give you is it will load up the emulator, deploy to the phone, and you get this lovely blue screen. I like to call this the blue screen of life because it means that your application is running. It's a nice cornflower blue. It's very soothing. And you'll also notice that if you click up here, you kind of get some of this information, and it's tilted, and that's because this is the default orientation for a Windows Phone game. It's more natural to kind of hold your phone that way when you're playing a game. Doesn't mean that you have to do that. You can just basically switch the orientation, and it will allow you to do a portrait, but that is the default. And you don't have to do anything for that. You don't have to rotate your sprites. When you put your sprites in there, it'll automatically rotate them to that orientation, or if you set it to the portrait, it'll set them up that way as well. So let's go ahead and hit stop debugging. And what we're going to do is we're going to draw a simple graphic onto the screen. So if we take a look at my graphics with my awesome graphic skills, it's a triangle. So this triangle is going to be the hero of the game. It is a white line with some black inside of it. So let's go ahead and bring this guy over. And what we're going to do is just drag and drop into the solution and drop it into content. So when I do that, it gets some default properties. You'll notice that the content importer is using a texture. That's because it is a texture that can be applied either as a sprite or it can be applied onto a 3D graphic as a texture onto there. It also has a content processor and some default information about what it should do with it. The most important part here, though, is that first one, the asset name. When you call the content pipeline, you need to address it by its asset name to be able to pull that over. So first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to create a texture file for it. So I'm going to say texture 2D, triangle, equal, not equals. All right, and then I'm going to load that. So we have initialize, we have load content. Because I'm loading stuff from the content directory, I'm going to be using load content. The names are very self-explanatory, so it makes it easy to find out where stuff is going to be put. So I'm going to say triangle equals content dot load, and it is a templated type, so I'm going to load of type texture 2D, and I'm going to call it by its asset name, which was triangle. So now if I go ahead and run this, pop back over to here, you'll notice that we show our blue screen. It just took a little bit longer because it was loading that from the content. We haven't actually drawn it anywhere yet. So we're going to draw it. Where should we draw it? Where should we put it in order to draw? Draw method. So we pop down to draw. And right here what I'm going to do, so we have up at the top by default a object called sprite batch. And that is for drawing batches of sprites. The reason that it does this is for efficiency and hardware. So what it does is it compiles all of the graphics together, figures out if any of them are going to be obscured and which parts it doesn't actually need to render, and then pushes all of those as a batch, which is why you use the sprite batch instead of just calling each one individually. So in order to do that, what we need to do is go to here and put sprite batch. Oh, this is my update. I don't want to put it in update. I want to put it in draw. Spritebatch.begin. There's a bunch of options that you can go through here, but we don't care about any of those right now. So I'll just say begin. And spritebatch.end. And then in between those, I'm going to say spritebatch.draw. And it asks what you want to draw. So I've got this texture 2D called triangle. So I'll go through here and say, I want to draw a triangle. And it asks where you want to draw it. So it gives me, in this instance, a destination rectangle. So when you put that in there, it'll do scaling to make it fit inside of that rectangle. But in this case, I just want to draw it at the default size. So if I move down to one of the other signatures, I can see that there's a vector 2 is one of the options. So I'll create a new vector 2, and I will place this thing at 100, 100. And they need to be floats. So I'll do that. And there's a color. So in this case, I have the white outline with the black inside. Color will actually tint that. So it'll change that white outline to whatever color I want to. In this case, what I want to do is I want to just tint it white. You know, don't actually tint it with anything. One of the more common uses that I see with this is that XNA has full support for alpha channel. So you can actually tilt it with an alpha and make it fade out. It's a really common thing when you kill something to make it just fade away. So I'll do color dot white. And if I run that, there we go. We got my graphic up there. So that gives you the ability to, you know, basically draw graphics directly onto the screen. But it's still not a very fun game, so let's go ahead and put some interactivity into it. Let's make it follow your finger around. So what I would do there is in my update method, I'm going to update the position based off of the touch location. So I'll scroll on up to here, and I will do vector 2 position. There we go. In my initialize, I'll go ahead and set a default position for it. 100, 100. So it's in that same location. And instead of this, I'll go ahead and draw it to the position. So that should work. So now we need to go ahead and update that. So we'll go down here, and in my update loop, what I want to do is I want to address the collection of touch locations through the multi-touch. So easy enough, what I do is give myself a touch collection, and we grab that from touchpanel.getState. So now with this, the Windows Phone has to have 4 points of multi-touch enabled on it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it so that basically any one of those points of multi-touch could move my character around. So I'll just do a 4 each. 4 each. And I want to say touch location TL in TC. And pop down to here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to check that touch location's position. And then I'm going to update my position to that touch location's position. So I'm going to say position equals TL dot, and here's some of the options that you get on here. So you get ID, position, and state. State is going to give you either invalid, pressed, released, or moved. So in this case, what I want is I just want it to move to wherever the finger is at. So any one of those would work. I'll show you how you can actually change that to only track the first touch point as soon as we get this up and running. So I'll say dot position, and it is a vector 2 as well. And I'll go ahead and run that. And because my laptop here doesn't have multi-touch, I can only do 1 point of multi-touch, and that 1 point of multi-touch is based on wherever the mouse is. So here's this. But sure enough, he follows my finger. Or mouse, in this case. Also, because of the way that the graphics works, I'm going to change this cornflower blue to a black. It's also more efficient. I'm not sure if they mentioned this, but the phones that we have use the OLED display, which means that if you're displaying black primarily, it's going to save battery. So if you have a game that has just some space over there, you can go ahead and do that. So my game is green.
So black background saves battery, right?
Black background, is that not what I said? They said no? White background? Why would that make sense? No, black background. Well, so with the OLED specifically, I mean, there might be other displays that have no difference between the two of them. From the specifications that I was reading and through our content guideline around using white space, which is actually black space in here, one of the reasons for that was because with the OLED, there's a large power saving for displaying black, whereas displaying any other color, including white, would have a higher than normal. So if you've got a lot of black space on your application, if you don't need to be using the space anyway, that will save battery. That may be different for certain different models, but that is the reasoning behind some of the display configurations that we did, and the reason that we went with the type of screen that we did. So maybe I solved that. I don't know. So color.black. Let's go ahead and see how that works. Now it's looking a little bit better. All right. So let's go ahead and go in here and take a look at this. So I've got the touch location, and it's just following it wherever. What I would do, and actually I have a slide about this, so I can just jump to that instead of having to type everything out. What do we got? What do we got? Draw. Multi-touch. Here we go. So this is the multi-touch example. What you would do is you would basically check to see if the state was pressed, because that's the first time that it sees that finger. You can see if you already have an ID, which you're setting as your movement ID, is equal to 0. The ID is an integer, and it's going to be different every time that you push it, so you can't guarantee that anything is going to be on there. So you would just save that somewhere in memory, and then on your movement, what you would do is you would update your position if that touch location matches that touch point, that ID. And then when you release, that's actually a really big thing, is when you release, you have to set it back to 0 because it changes every time, so it adds 1 every time, at least in the testing that I've done here. So you'll never get the same ID twice. So if you don't do that last step there, then as soon as you lift up your finger, you no longer can control your game. All right, so let's do one thing on here, though. You'll notice that in this game, let's say that we're developing some kind of a game where basically the goal is to get from the left side of the screen to the right, and there's a bunch of barriers, maybe a maze in between. If you're using the code that I've got right now, what ends up happening is in order to go over to the right side of the screen, you click here and you're instantly there and you win. So a better control might be something along the lines of move towards the location that you're going towards. So the way that you would do that is you would actually pull over, and I'm just going to steal some code here. It's okay, I wrote it. So in my update, I'm going to go in here and update player. I'm going to get a direction. And I'm going to drop that into this. So instead of saying position is equal to touch location.position, I'm going to find the direction that I should be moving into. I'm then going to normalize that. So anyone know, like, with vector mathematics, basically you have a direction and a magnitude. If you normalize it, the magnitude goes down to 1. So no matter how far away you are, you have something pointing in that direction, but with a distance of 1. So I'll do direction.normalize, so that I don't move super fast across the screen. And then I'll say position plus equals direction. And this should work. There it goes. Now he's following my finger, but he's going really slow. So what you want to do is you want to give a speed as well. And I'll say times 10. All right. Now he's following my finger. So the other thing is that this is a triangle. A triangle has directionality. You're pointing towards the narrow part on there. So you also might want him to point in that right direction. So this is one of the cool parts, because you finally get to use math. Man, math is awesome. So what you would do is you would go in here and you would use something like this. So you would also set a rotation. And I'm still running. And your rotation is calculated by using the arctangent, which is awesome. It's great, because like I always used to go back and be like, oh man, I really like math, but I never get to use it. And so now you get to use math. You guys like math too, right? Yeah. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to give you a float, call it rotation, go down to the initialize, set the rotation equal to 0, and down in my draw, there is a bunch of other stuff that I can do in here. So if I go down to one of these, I've got my position, I've got my source rectangle, so that actually brings up a point. The source rectangle is, if you're using a sprite sheet, which is basically a large graphic with multiple different frames of an animation, you can say which part of it you want to pull from and only draw that part of it. And so that would be done using the source rectangle. If you want to draw the whole thing, you can just set that equal to null, because that question mark means that it's nullable. And so here's my color, color.white. Next thing is float rotation, so I'm just going to give it rotation. There's the vector 2 for the origin. So the origin is the point at which point about which you rotate. So you can make that the center, that you can make that the top right, you can make that any of those locations. In this case, what I want to do is I want to make it the center of the back. So I'm going to say new vector 2, and I'm going to drop in the x is going to be 0, and the y is going to be triangle.height divided by 2. And finally, we're going to do sprite effects dot none. So you can flip horizontally or vertically. That's a really common thing, is to have to flip them horizontally, which is why if you look back at like the Nintendo Legend of Zelda, Link is always left-handed unless he's facing the other direction, and then he's right-handed. So we'll just say none. And layer depth is the Z order. So if you're drawing multiple items, the default order in which they draw them is the last one that you draw goes in front. Or you can manually set a Z order here. So I'll just give it a 0. And we'll try and run that. All right, what did we do wrong? Vector, sprite batch. Let me take a look at my variables. Sprite effects, layer, vector 2 origin, float color, texture 2D. Nope, not that one. Float scale. All right, I'm missing a float because I was using the wrong. All right, so the scale is the multiplier that you want to make it big or little. Most of the time you put 0 in these things. If I put a 0 here, it won't draw it because it'll be scaled down to nothing. So this should be a 1, and that should work. There we go. So now if I look at this, sure enough, he is now following my finger. Oh, wait. Okay, now it's working. A-tan 2. See, that's something that I didn't know. So what I had been using was actually...
A-tan 2, you put in the X and the Y, and it does that for you.
That's so easy. I was doing this if statement and being all like, all right, if it's 0 because you don't want to divide by 0, and then if it's positive or negative. And that's because of one of these things that we probably all forgot, is if you're using an arctangent, you don't necessarily know the sign. So A-tan 2, you say. All right.
You give that to the students after they figure out the biggest.
Oh, wait. A-tan 2.
And it's just scratching out like X, scratching
out. Nifty. Now we'll see if you're right. Ta-da! Okay, cool. So... I want to do two more things. One of them is drawing text to the screen, because it's not something like putting a label on there. And the other one is collision. So let's go ahead and do both of those at the same time. So what I'm going to do is, first of all, make a string, and I'm going to call it status text in my initialization. You want to say status text equals you are fine. So the reason that I'm putting all of this stuff into initialize instead of just initializing it up here is because you've got the initialize, and generally what I'll do is I'll take all of this stuff out, put it into a single method, and then if you want to like restart the game, you just call that method. So you know, bringing everything out just makes it easier to restart a game, which is something that you do a lot more often than restart an application. So here is the you are fine text, and I want to draw that to the screen. But in XNA, there's a lot of things around efficiency. We want to make it as efficient as possible, so we don't want to load necessarily everything over. We don't have the ability to do a full-on text editing kind of thing. You can't put a label without bringing over every letter that you're going to want to use first and converting it over to a bitmap, because it works really good with bitmaps. So what you have to do is you have to use something called a sprite font, which is actually really easy to use. In earlier versions of XNA, it was kind of tough because you used to have to do every single letter yourself. Now you just go in here, go into content, add a new item, sprite font. I will call it font, because I am original. So here's the name of the font that you want to use. Here's the size that you want to use. So let's go ahead and make this 48, because it's big. The spacing, whether you want to use kerning, the style. So if you want to have italics, you would have to include both. And then which characters you want to bring over. This is actually really interesting because I didn't know about this for a while. I was doing an application that included Eastern Asian language support, and specifically for the Japanese language. And in Unicode, they hide those all through everywhere. Like, there's a little bit of characters here, here, here. And in between those is all of the Chinese and Korean characters as well. So you can't just bring over a huge block, because that would be a huge amount of memory, which would make your game take forever to load. So I actually wrote a content pipeline manager based off of a localization sample on the Microsoft website that basically read an entire document of all of the characters that I wanted and then created the sprite font for that. So you can do that. That makes it a lot easier than actually making each one of these things and creating new character regions and stuff. So yeah, if you run into that, that's good to know. All right, so now I've got this sprite font. So I'm going to go up here, make a holder for it. Sprite font, font. Down in load content, because it is content, I'm going to say font equals. And you'll notice that this is all very straightforward, which is really what I'm trying to convince you guys, is that you know how to do this already. There we go. So I've got my font. And right down here, I'm going to draw a string by doing .drawString. And it asks me where I want to draw it. So first, which font do you want to use? Next, what's the text that you want to draw? And then where do you want to draw it? And finally, what color do you want to draw it in? Color.white. We'll do that. You're fine. Okay. Let's draw something that I can collide into. So I will grab an enemy here. My enemies are very menacing. And pop that out. Here we go. So I'll do the same kind of stuff. Want a texture 2D for my enemy. Want to load him in the load content. So let's just do that. And I called this enemy-5. And now I want to draw him somewhere. And I will just draw him SpriteBadge.draw. With a lowercase s, draw. Enemy, we'll say 500, 200 as a new vector 2. And color.white. All right, now I've got this enemy right there. And I'm going to collide with him. So in my update, I'm going to do some collision detection. If new rectangle, so I know where the location's at. Ignore. New rectangle. So I'm going to say int x, int y. So this was at 500, 200. So I'll put that right there, 500, 200, comma, enemy.width, comma, enemy.height, dot contains position. And of course, width and height need to be cast to ints, which is why it's complaining to me. I thought that was why it was complaining to me. All right, where am I missing something? Best overloaded for rectangle.contains. Ah, is a point. New point. Position.x. Position.y. And those also need to be ints. Okay. Now, point. Hooray. All right, so if it contains that, status text equals you are dead. Straightforward. Now, I'm dead. So that's basically everything you need to build a introductory game. So if you wanted to go through and get some stuff started, you've got collision, you've got status text, you can do stuff like do integers for points, and then just display those using that drawstring method. You can put all this stuff in there. You've got the rotation. So as you saw in my example code with the application, I just have them spinning, so the animation is as simple as rotating them. So let's hop back over to this guy. And I will show you one or two things on here, namely the accelerometer. So you'll notice here I've got accelerometer in my initialize. I check to see if this is the accelerometer mode, in which case I instantiate it, change the reading on it, so I add a event handler, and then I try and start the accelerometer. So if I'm running in the emulator, because it doesn't have an accelerometer, that might crash, so you just have to put the try loop around it. And then you pop down to the accelerometer here. And here's my accelerometer reading changed. So I just check to see here, set my direction equal to, and I do a little bit of capping on it, but it's as simple as E, which is the event args for the accelerometer, dot Y, and E dot X. They're actually inverted because the default for the accelerometer is like this, but I'm doing it like this, so I have to use the X for the Y and the Y for the X. And that. Other than that, you know, you basically set the player position, do the same thing, direction times speed, because you've got that vector too. And then the last thing that I will show on here is how to use the buttons. And so in my update method, what I'm doing is when you're dead, it's going to print a little screen on the front that says you lose. In that state, pressing the back button will reset the game. In any other state, pressing the back button will exit the game. There's actually a set of guidance around what you should be using the hardware buttons for. So back should be used to pause your game and also to exit your game. So you should be able to get out of your game without having to go back to the home screen. I'm also doing some things where I'm basically keeping track of the high score. I would like to, before I finish the application, publish that to some source. I get HTTP and HTTPS calls, so I can do that pretty easily. And then I would also like to be able to have some persistent storage on the local machine so that I can track my local high score as well. So let's pop back over to here. And what have we learned? Basically, we've taken a look at the default code, and it keeps doing that. We've looked at the initialization and drawing of sprites and images, how to move things using multi-touch, and the detection of images colliding. If you are here for the lab tomorrow, we will actually have a full-on game with a walkthrough of exactly how to do everything that I did today, but with different sprites, different play style and everything there. And then I'll also be posting this up to my blog, as I mentioned. So what should you guys be doing? First off, you should visit the App Hub, which is really easy to get to, create.msdn.com, or you can go to any of the previous addresses that you may have gone to, and it'll redirect you there. You should download the tools and register for the marketplace. By registering for the marketplace, you get early access to being able to deploy your applications onto the marketplace. You can also, once you're there, check out the education roadmap. I'll show you how to do that. Try out a starter kit. We actually have full-on starter kits written as snippets, where we give you the full source code, all of the graphics, everything that you need to do to build a more advanced game than the one that I've got here. And we also have a learning group. So if you go to learnwp7.groups.live.com, we meet every Tuesday here on campus over in Building 5. We usually meet at 6 o'clock. And what we do is we basically go through, we've gone through a couple of the Windows Phone 7 books that had previews up there. We've been going through some of the learning kits. We've been doing some sample application development. And we've been showing each other, you know, what we've been developing and working off that. We also have devices that we have at the group. So if you wanted to try it on application on one of the actual devices, we can work with you on that. And then I've been passing around one of the devices every week so that one of the developers in our group can take it home. So I'll be trying to do that as well. So that is learnwp7.groups.live.com. So this is the App Hub. You'll notice that we've got up in the top right, one of the rotating things is Create Games for Windows Phone 7. It's a full-on educational series that walks you through building everything that you need to do all the way to advanced. You can also click on Education right here, and that'll take you to the education roadmap. So you notice that there are multiple parts on here where you can do different games, and it'll teach you how to do all of this. And this is one of the code snippets. This is the Platformer Starter Kit. It's a fully built game that you can use to find out how they did certain things, get best practices, or modify and build a different game on top of that. There's also a bunch of just smaller code snippets on how to do state management, how to handle certain different types of input, so you can work directly from those. So I would be glad to take any questions about any of the game development or the kind of stuff right now. Yes? The question was around the minimum amount that we will be giving of the GPU performance. Yes, there is. I don't know the exact specifications on there. If you go to the App Hub site, there's a list of exactly what hardware and everything we have on there, and it goes through some of the different things on there. You can also take a look. We have some tuning your application type articles that show how you can use performance monitors to make sure what kind of frame rate you're getting and how to improve that by optimizing your code. Yes?
Can you make CLI code and XMI code in one application?
That's actually a really good question. The question was, can you mix Silverlight and XNA code in the same application? Kind of. You can have a single presenter. So if you're doing a presentation using Silverlight, you can use assemblies from XNA like the microphone, the accelerometer. You can bring over the sound effects class that they have there. So you can use those, but you only have a single presenter. Same thing with XNA. You can bring over Silverlight samples, Silverlight assemblies, but you can't use the Silverlight presenter on the XNA application. One of the more commonly requested features that we get is to be able to mix those for something like an XNA game with a menu done in Silverlight. That's not something we can do right now, but it is something that we get a lot of requests for. Any other questions? Yes?
Can I use the
camera? Yes. So you can use the camera by using a chooser, which basically exits out of your application, so you get tombstoned. So you would have to be able to save your state. Gives you an application where you can go in and take a picture or pick a picture from your library, and then return that back to your application. It would resume the state. You'd load back your information, and you'd have that picture available to you as a stream.
Okay.
question was around a live game, so something where you have augmented reality. That is not something that you can do right now. You have to go through the chooser API. That is another one of the features that we get requested a lot, so that's something we're looking at. Yes?
There's a light sensor. Are you able to use that within Silverlight or
Daniel, can you use the light sensor?
We're going to talk about that in the next session. But
okay, so that's going to be covered in the next session. I've seen applications using it, but I don't know if they were first-party only kind of stuff. So, yeah, they'll cover that. Can you use a stylus for input on the phone? The touch screen is, I believe it's capacitive?
Capacitive, yeah.
Capacitive touch, yeah. So if you have there are certain types of styluses that are built to work with that kind of stuff, but generally, no. So if you just had a stick or something like that and you used it, no, it wouldn't work. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so there are specific, the comment was there are specific types of styluses that are used for this type of phone. So you'd have to look specifically at the stylus. If it's just like, you know, the kind with the soft nub on the end of it, that kind does not work, like the rubberized one there. Yeah, there was a question back here.
How viable is a Bluetooth head-to-head game?
How viable is a Bluetooth head-to-head game? I don't believe that that's possible in version 1. No. So what you do have the ability to make HTTP, HTTPS requests. You can connect to another, like to a web server, and communicate that way. There is an API that you get through Live that gives you turn-based game, where you can basically push stuff back and forth. But you're not guaranteed necessarily the bandwidth that you could do a live game or connect to somebody else through Bluetooth. Right.
Any plans to add a second mouse so I can actually...
Okay, so the question was around doing two-finger gestures on the device. If your computer supports multi-touch, multi-touch works in the emulator. And I have seen some people who were able to emulate the two-finger touch using a second device, something along those lines. It has happened, but you really have to check ahead of time. So you would want to look on there, for example, like the Wacom tablets. A lot of times they say multi-touch in Windows 7, but they don't give you true multi-touch. What they do is they have an interim driver, so it doesn't work on the emulator. There are solutions that I've seen that have worked. I don't have a specific example, but if you search online, you should be able to find them. Yeah, here. Can we do TCP, UDP sockets?
No.
No. So HTTP, HTTPS, so you can connect to a web service. Okay, so I am going to be outside here at the booth. Some of you have received little ducks. I've got those for you. If you're a student, one last word on here is we have a raffle specifically for students. So it's separate from the other raffle on there. You can put it in there. Your odds are going to be better because there's less students here. Giving away one of the 250 gig Xboxes. So we just need basically name and email address on a card or a business card or something along those lines. Come over and talk to me at that booth there. If you win, you will need to prove to me that you're a student. So, I mean, yeah, if you put your card in there and you're not a student or you can't prove that you're a student, we'll work it out if you are. Great. Thank you very much. All right.